Hello and welcome to Kicking It Off, the podcast where Dad and I explore the passion, purpose, and the people behind youth football. Today, we're joined by Joe Harvey, head of pre-academy recruitment at Norwich City. Joe is a firm believer in a child-first approach, where the focus isn't just on finding talent, but on creating an environment where the kids can enjoy the game, feel supported, and grow both on and off the pitch. Joe's story is about keeping the joy of football at the heart of development. Joe, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's really nice to meet you. I know you met Dad at a Playphase roadshow event, so I'm sure we'll pick up on that later in the conversation. But as always, here on Kicking It Off, Joe, I wonder if you wouldn't mind sharing how you got into coaching and where your journey began?
Yeah, so believe it or not, I started coaching at the age of 14. It was helping my friend's dad out. He used to work for the community scheme here at Norwich. Back in the late kind of 90s, early 2000s. And he used to do a session as part of his job, but in our village. And it got to the point when I was 14 that I was suddenly bigger than everybody else. And it got to the point where I wasn't enjoying it playing. And he wasn't enjoying it because he thought I was going to probably hurt someone. So he was just like, can you help? So I was like, of course. And it kind of snowballed. I kind of then worked out. By that point, I'd broken my leg twice. I'd also had other injuries. So I was like, I'm never going to play at a kind of decent level. So I was like, this could be another way of staying within the game. So, and then over the next kind of 3 or 4 years, I helped him in the evenings. I used to go to the local development centres with him. I used to help him in soccer schools during the school holidays. And then probably Pete can remember in those days, your level one was what was called your junior team manager's qualification.
Yeah.
So I did that at 16, as soon as I could. And then as soon as I could, started running a local grassroots team in the local town and coached them from them being under sevens to under 11s. And also over the time, I've managed a veterans team. I've managed a SEP 7 and 6 adult team and an under 18s team. And then because of my relationship with the foundation, once I'd done my level two in, I think, 2002, 2003, I got a part-time coaching job because they'd seen me do so many unpaid hours over the years. I did that for a couple of years part-time. And then 2005, I got a full-time job coaching within the foundation here at the club and did that until 2021, until I moved across into the academy with the pre-academy. And on an academy point of view, I was also a part-time scout from 2005 up until 2021. So my connection with the football club is deep. I'm a Norwich fan, first and foremost, being from the area. But I've also kind of seen how everything's changed over the time, both in the coaching and the kind of on pitch for the first team, really.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And like I said, probably got a dream job as a Norwich fan, working in the academy and hopefully developing players that can go on and play for us in the future.
So a massive experience working at adult level, very young players and every age group in between. So I think that's a really strong message for some of the coaches who might be listening, in that certainly the voluntary hours are where you build up your experience, your knowledge, your coaching craft, if you like. And that's what really sets you up for whatever, you know, the future holds. That seems to be the case for you, Joe.
Oh, completely. I think you can't be hours on the grass. And for me, I think the hours for me have been in many different situations, which I'll probably expand on later, from football to multi-sports, to working in schools, to working with deprived children in social inclusion sessions. Over the years, I've done so many different types of coaching that actually working now within the pre-acad setting, you're blessed because you've got children that A, want to be here, a and B, children that have, I mean, a good solid starting point. And you kind of have to kind of remind yourself how lucky you are. But I think all of those hours of maybe when life is a little bit harder has kind of set me in good stead, really.
Yeah.
You obviously mentioned that you've worked with and you've coached lots of different age ranges and players of lots of different experience and from different walks of life. Do you think that experience has influenced how you now coach or the philosophy that you have when you're working with younger players?
Completely. I think I've now, in my head, decided that working from kind of 6 to 8, 6 to 9 is the age range for me. I think that suits myself and my skill set 100 times better than working with an adult player. But I think it's taken me kind of 20, 25 years of practice to understand what that is. And I think also there's probably too many people think they've got a coach at an under 18 adult level to be recognised as a coach.
Yeah.
Where I think I'm probably maybe a rarity of going, no, I'm loving staying with the little ones.
Yeah.
And I want to become the best I can be at working with the younger players.
So I think it'll be really interesting for our listeners, Joe. What kind of qualities then do you think you possess or you've developed that will help you become really effective with this age group?
I think number one is patience. And I think that's been tested more from being a parent as well. I think I've learned that in spades over the last few months. I always thought it was a good quality, but I think I've learned it even more. And I keep getting told by my lovely wife that I have that in abundance. And I think also as well, you just have to remember their children and not looking at them as footballers or as players in whatever chosen sport it could be. They are fundamentally young people with little life experience, and we have to help and shape them in whatever that could be, and not trying to compare them to a professional in whatever sport, because they're nowhere near that yet.
Yeah.
Yes, that could be their dream, and we never want to shatter that, but they are still a child. So that's the most important.
That's really nice to hear. And it has been the same for all of the other coaches that we've talked to as well throughout both series. And so it's really affirming to hear such a similar attitude towards coaching children, that the time that they spend with you, whether that's grassroots or in an academy, should enrich their lives, not just their footballing opportunities. Child first, football second. It's just really great to hear how this mentality is so widespread.
Yeah, I think in the past, Joe, I was a bit worried about professional clubs bringing really quite young children into their academy systems. And there wasn't the expertise or the real dedication to seeing them as children. I think that's changed now. I think it's great that there are specialists like yourself who really understand what's going on at the child's end, and you're making sure that you deliver against that in your programs. Have Norwich City always had a pre-academy programme?
Yeah, we have. It's probably only since I came into post where we've had someone probably dedicated to it, kind of, I suppose, on a full-time individual basis. Our health head of foundation phase was kind of doing both.
Right.
And then they decided that actually, no, it needs its own focus to actually really enhance the young players for two areas. One, it'll give the young players the greatest starting point. And also, as a club here in Norwich, we are geographically challenged. We probably don't have the talent pool and or just the population pool of many players, especially at pre-academy age, that live within the hour rules set by the Premier League as part of ECPP.
Yeah.
Because if you look at our radius, half of it's the North Sea. So again, we have to be very clever in what we do, how we deliver it, and the environments we create, because, you mean, we're not like a Northwest club, a London club, that's got a massive talent pool to choose from.
Yeah.
And I think if you look at the players that are in the building across it, so there's a lad at the moment called Brad Hills, who's in and around our first team. Brad came in at 7, local boy, and he's now worked his way through to being part of Johannes's kind of squad, which is brilliant, and it's great testament to everybody here over the years for the work they've done. And the challenge is now can we find more Brads?
Yeah.
Can we use Brad as that shining light of, look, a local boy can do it?
Yeah.
And hopefully they will.
I think that's happening more and more, where, and I think it's a really good indicator that your program is getting close to as good as it can be. If you've got players or children, young people who are able to progress right the way through. And I think that comes from the program having the right priorities. And I'll ask you about that in a moment. But it's also having consistent staff with consistent messages that really hold the player's hand as they go through all the trials and tribulations that we know lie ahead, but they help just smooth it out and really make it possible that more and more very young children can progress right the way through to the first team. So with that in mind, Joe, what priorities would you say, you know, are non-negotiable for your pre-academy program?
So when we recruit a player in, first and foremost, we look at them, at the child, and make sure, are they ready for it? Because we're aware of there's lots of talented little boys, and some of them may not be ready to be in this environment. And there is players that we've actually said, look, maybe come and train with us once a week and then build it up slowly. Again, coming back to that child-centered approach first, to make sure it's the right thing for them. And then also we have kind of seven themes we look for within our players, because we don't want the group to be the same. So a group of dribblers, a group of passers, whatever, for two reasons. A, it doesn't really enhance the group and challenge the group across different aspects of their development. And B, we've looked at it going, whoever's in charge, maybe in 10 years, if they're around as a scholar or a 21s player, whoever's in charge of the first team, they might have a different range of skill sets. So actually two or three of them might make that step.
Yeah.
And trying to give more players that opportunity to progress. And we've seen it over the last kind of 4 years that I think we had a bit of a reputation of being little Norwich when you go and compete in the games programming against Arsenal, Chelsea, Spurs every week, where now it's a level playing field. And the games are competitive and they're a good battle where actually everyone learns from him.
Yeah.
So I think the kind of model we've gone down has really, really worked. And hopefully, like I said, the players that are in the foundation phase currently will go and kick on and hopefully, fingers crossed, make the journey.
Yeah.
So for any grassroots coaches then who might not have the resources of an academy but want the children that are coming to work with them to have an equally positive experience that you're offering these children, do you have any advice for, you obviously mentioned that there's seven themes that you look out for, or just identifying which children are ready and which would do from, you know, drip feeding them in almost. And just any advice for grassroots coaches to be able to take on some of those themes and that philosophy, but in a way that might be manageable for them?
I think, again, it's looking at every child as an individual and understanding what that child might need. Some children might need more work around their confidence and maybe stepping away from mum and dad at under sevens just for that hour's training session or 40 minutes game on a Saturday and having that reassurance that the adult they're with is safe, enjoyable and fun. But then also for the coaches to not get drawn up in the result culture under sevens, under eights. Actually, winning can be development, and actually keeping the team together, seeing people progress, and actually when it does come competitive at 11s and 12s, then maybe start using results, but just kind of focus on them. And again, we know how many hours grassroots coaches devote to the game. Some people probably do many, many unpaid hours behind the scenes, whether it's sorting kit, making sure everyone's going to be at training, et cetera, et cetera. But if they have time, it's actually plan a little bit around the individual that actually player X might need to work on, I don't know, how to strike the ball properly, both with maybe the top or the laces and the inside of the foot. Where actually player B can do that really well, but maybe struggled in a 1v1 drill.
Yeah.
And actually how they can start setting up games that challenges each individual to improve those areas, but then also seeing the match on a Saturday or Sunday as the extension of the training session. saying, right, actually, your challenge training was to strike the ball with the inside of your foot a lot better. Can you do that five times during the game for me? And actually linking the two together.
Yeah, a couple of really strong messages there, Joe. Certainly about trying to meet individual needs. And this came up, we recorded a podcast just a few days ago. And we tried to help coaches understand that the area size is important. The number of players that you include in your practice is important. But who you play against who and who you play with who to make sure that they're trying to either complement or improve their individual needs is really important and is such an important part of the planning process. So I think to hear it from you as well, you know, I think that's a really strong one. And also that I'm not the best coach if my team wins at the weekend. I'm not the worst coach if my team loses. And I think getting that whole thing about results in perspective is one of the biggest issues that we're trying to combat. So to hear it from you within, you know, a professional academy that you're able to, again, to smooth that imposter out, I think that's another great message for the, you know, the coaches who are going to be listening to this. So thanks for that.
All right.
If you had to say, right, we recognize that they're children, we try to meet their individual needs. You mentioned confidence a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
If you had to say, forget the football, when the young children come to us, what are the things do you think you help them develop in order to help them in their broader, you know, childhood, their young lives?
I think probably two ways. Firstly is that multi-skills approach. So we'll do a lot of multi-skills activities at the start of the sessions. Some of it will be with the ball to maximise the contact time. Some of it will be not with the ball. It might be throwing the ball. It might be tag games, where actually that physical literacy that's going to serve them through life in whatever sport they could go and play is fundamental,
yeah,
and helping them move. And the second one is the social side, where they have to go and talk to each other. We encourage them to go and ask each other questions around what's just happened or explain what's just happened. And again, like you touched on previously, is we'll try and match people up where maybe the shyer ones will go together so not feeling over-intimidated, and the more outspoken ones will do it. And sometimes we'll flip that on its head and put a shy child with an outspoken one to actually see if they can do it and encourage it. So again, it's just kind of building on both of them. And like the session tonight, their children, like I said earlier, we know that they all want to score goals. So at the end of every session, we do a shooting game. So it's under sevens against under eights. The noise coming out of the arena is unbelievable because they're all booing and cheering each other on. And then when whoever wins, it's like mass celebrations. They're sliding their knees, just like Bellingham does, etc. But again, giving them that freedom of it's their event, it's their session, and we are just helping them and supporting them. We're not telling them this is what you've got to do, and it's down to them. But having that freedom and that confidence to be able to, I suppose, express themselves as well.
Yeah,
we've spoken about that in another episode where if a ball is to go out of play, especially with younger players, they're all going to chase after this ball. Like, these children want to have the ball at their feet. They want to be scoring goals. That's why they're probably here at, you know, practicing football. And I think it was really nice to hear that you touched on like peer-to-peer learning, and that actually that relationship of learning doesn't always have to be coach, parent to the child. That there's so much socially, physically, emotionally that they can learn from one another. And I think it's really important for coaches to identify that's something that can be incorporated into a coaching session. And it doesn't mean that a coach is then having an easy ride and going, well, I'm going to let them sort it out themselves. But actually giving responsibility to children at that young age is a really, really advantageous thing, because that's just going to influence players' decision making. And actually that connection, if you're wanting these players to play better together on the pitch, if they're building up that line of communication and a dialogue between one another, that's going to influence how they play as a team. So I just think that is a really nice thing that can be happening in sessions.
Yeah, you mentioned two things there for me, Joe, and they really resonate. So, you'll have heard this from me a million times, about young children are in that perfect period of their lives where exploring and being curious is absolutely on, you know, red alert. And if we can incorporate that approach within the way that we coach, the way that we set up the practices to give them the time and the opportunity to explore and experiment, I think we're aligning our coaching methodology with exactly where the children are and what they need. And then the second part is that importance of play, and that noise that you describe from the, you know, from the dome, I can almost hear it. For me, that's such a great sound. And it means that the kids are fully engaged, absolutely in the moment and loving what they do. And I think those more informal opportunities are as important as the structure and, you know, all the organized stuff that we know is part of developing your football skills. But I get the feeling that you've really thought about and got the balance really right with what your, you know, what your program entails.
Yeah, I think exactly that. I think it's a balance. We have to kind of respect and remember we are here as a professional academy that is here to kind of find footballers, but then also, like I said, remember their children and have that fun and then wanting to come back and wanting to be here. And for any child at 6, 7, 8, walking into an indoor arena, which they don't have at the grassroots club, suddenly, especially on a Friday night, if you've got our under-21s team that are playing on the pitch next door, it can probably be a daunting environment to come into. So actually, them wanting to be here every week is kind of critical. Not only does it help them develop as players, it helps from a recruitment point of view, because some of these players might have offers from other clubs.
Yeah.
And again, so it works kind of twofold. But I just wanted to pick up on something Lauren said earlier. One of the phrases that I live by is connection before correction, that I stole from our mutual friend, Sally Needham. And it's something when I did some work with her a couple of years ago, one-to-one, around how to kind of build connections first. And that's just now stuck with me. And if I can connect with the little person and the parent, hopefully it will help. So we do connection questionnaires at the start of every season. We do one for the child. We do one for the parent.
Oh, wow.
Just to try and have as much information around them as they come into the building.
Yeah.
So we know who their favourite team is, their favourite player, their favourite food, whatever it could be that could be their favourite TV show at 6 years old. So we can just spark some informal conversations that get to know them as little people. And it's also quite interesting to read the parents' answers against the kids' answers, because sometimes what the kids are telling us are different to what the parents say. So that's also an interesting one as well.
Yeah. I think what I'm picking up on is I'm getting a really good feel about, I think there's a thought that academies, oh, they select children, they bring them into the program, they do a little bit of work with them, they're in the churn and then they spit them out. Because I don't get that feeling with, you know, what you're telling us about your program. I think there's a real opportunity for children's childhood to have some value added just by coming into contact with your program, your coaches, and the environment that you've created. And I'm hoping the coaches listening to this will just pick up on all of the things that you've said and begin to think about how they can incorporate that into their own programs. And then I think we'll build more and more environments and coaches who understand that when working with children this young, there are certain things that are non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. And you've described a lot of them today, Joe. So that's been really good. Thank you.
No problem.
And so I would just be really keen to know what your influences were when you were creating this program.
So I've done a lot of study visits to other Cat 1 academies and other category academies around the country, kind of looking at maybe the bigger established Premier League clubs that have a massive budget to be able to go and throw at this in highly competitive areas, right down to smaller Cat 3 academies that will hire out a local power league to deliver their pre-academy because they've got no facilities of their own. So I've gone around over the last 3 years and spent as much time with my peers, kind of trying to learn and share and take things. As people know, all of us coaches are the best thieves in the world of taking everybody's ideas and then trying to use that to kind of formulate ours.
Yeah.
So it's not been, oh, I've been to X club, I'm going to take that idea and just copy it. It's going to, how does it work for us?
Yeah.
How does it work for the children that we have? Because predominantly in East Anglia, a lot of our players will be from two-parent, steady families, which in other parts of the country might not be the case.
Yeah.
So some of our players will have a different upbringing to maybe the norm of an academy player, and how we can help that and develop their skills because they've come from a different starting point. But then also the technical, tactical psych side of it as well, and try to kind of mould the whole thing together, really. So I wouldn't say there's been one influence. I think it's been a combination of many over the years. And that includes staff that are in the building now.
Mm-hmm.
So like our head of FP has been in now 10, 12 years. So again, we've got that continuity of, right, this is how we want it to be.
Yeah.
Et cetera. So I think, like I said, there's been so many different influences. It'd be kind of rude just to pick out one or two, really.
Yeah. Last question, Joe. If you were observing a group of coaches working with children and you'd got a vacancy at your pre-academy, what would you be looking for in a coach with the children that might make you think, do you know what, that they'd be brilliant for what we're trying to build at Norwich City?
First and foremost, energy and enthusiasm. And as I say to the staff is, you mean they've all got other jobs when they come in here in the evening, they're all part-time coaches, is they might have had the hardest day in the world. But for the hour and a half they're in contact with the young players, if you have to put an act on, do it. Because for the young players, this is their golden time of the week. So you just have to try and forget about everything else and have that energy, have that enthusiasm that's going to get them on board. They are 6, 7, 8 years old. And that is what they will feed off.
Yeah.
If we're energetic, enthusiastic, they're going to do the same. And suddenly the tempo of the sessions, the tempo of the stuff will build and build and build because they'll feed off us.
Yeah.
And that starts from when we meet and greet them in the changing rooms. So again, we'll be outside tonight at 4:45, high-fiving them all, getting them into the changing rooms, saying hello to mum and dad, and then walking them into the arena. So we're not even just waiting for them to rock up. We're trying to create it even before they've stepped into the arena. Again, like I said, that's probably the number one thing. And then we can work on like the tech stuff,
yeah,
as well, and kind of mould people into how the information that we want to share and the right words, the terminology, etc. But they've got to have that personality first and foremost.
Yeah, that's not a bad starting point, Joe. So thanks for thanks for describing that. Well, that's been really useful and certainly will supplement, you know, all the other key messages and those golden threads that have run through a lot of our podcasts. And you've just put Norwich City's own slant on it. And I really want to commend you because I think the kids who come to Norwich City are getting a great deal. And long may it continue.
Definitely. Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much for joining us, Joe. It's been really, really great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you very much. Take care. Thank you.